Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're ever looking to get behind the scenes, it's simple. Follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, or you will see myself, O-Dog and Noodles, what we do in the studio, before the show, during the show, after the show, constantly updating stories and best of clips. Again, follow us on Instagram at TSN1050.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
All right, we got Bruce Arthur in here from the Toronto Star. I've not seen Bruce in quite some time. I don't think anybody's read anything from Bruce in quite some time, and I think you're pretty happy about that, Bruce.
Yeah, pretty much nobody's seen me in like about a month or so since Masai's press conference after trading for Kawhi Leonard. I have been swimming in pools and going to beaches and taking my kids to playgrounds and
good man
doing all that kind of stuff.
That's the move, because we are in the great abyss of August in the Toronto sports scene. And this is how ugly it is. The Jays are in Seattle.
Yeah.
And the bigger story is how many people are coming in from Vancouver, as if that matters. Like, people in Toronto are supposed to care that people from BC are making their way down there. And Tyler Clippard is your starting pitcher tonight.
Great.
So it's going to be one of those bullpen Tampa Bay Rays kind of moves. And
kind of a weird game. That's your best case scenario, actually, with the Jays probably the rest of the way, is that some of their games are going to be really weird.
If you're willing to tune in for them, that's the problem. Like, chances are a lot of people are going to miss them because you can't possibly watch every inning the rest of the way.
You know what you need? You need some of those Mets games. You need, like, your Mets 24-1 Jose Reyes' pitching games.
And then some guy gets cut right afterwards?
Yeah, like that's... The Jays have entered that part of the year, which I think a lot of us saw coming, where it just doesn't matter. And to care about it implies that you are truly in the tank for this team. You are devoted to this team in a way that defies their performance. So good for you.
Yeah, I mean, I've compared this to the Maple Leaf tank season from a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Although that was intentional. The Jays are not intentionally tanking. They did not want to finish with 70 wins or sub 70. Shapiro and Atkins tried to convince people that this could actually break their way and they could be competitive, and we knew pretty quickly that that wasn't going to be the case. But that Leaf season, you knew it was about the future. And they did call up some kids at the end of the year. Nylander came up, and Brown and Hyman. And I guess there's a chance Vlady Guerrero does that, but I don't see the value in that move.
Nope.
They haven't announced what they're going to do with that. But it was really, really difficult to actually tune into every single Leaf game. And they weren't playing every single day.
The great thing about that Leaf season, though, is it was like scaffolding, right? Like, you knew it was temporary. You knew that once the scaffolding came down, there was going to be a new building there. You just didn't know what it was going to look like, so it was super easy. That Leaf season was like a gift. It was like the team telling you, go off and have your year of life without the Leafs. Go for walks, go to movies, go have dinner.
A sabbatical.
Do whatever you
want.
Get
out of here for a bit.
Come back here after a year. We're going to try our best. We're probably not going to be very good, and next year will be completely different, and we'll forget any of this happened.
And that's what happened. The next year, they made the playoffs.
Perfect.
And one of the most entertaining seasons in the past 25 years.
Now, had they not won the lottery, it maybe would look a little different.
But that was the end goal, right? The idea that you're going to tank to try to get Matthews. And if you don't get him, then at least you get Line A or Pugliarvi or whoever they're going to take.
Well, imagine if they'd wound up with Pugliarvi.
It would have been a very different vibe in the city, right? I'm not sure Tavares is here. That's an interesting question.
Everything changes.
Do you think Tavares is here if they ended up with Jesse Pugliarvi in the fourth pick?
Well, when John Tavares signed that deal, what did he say? The feeling of kind of loving the Leafs and being a childhood fan of the Leafs came as the process went on. He listened because they were good. He listened because they could win Stanley Cups. And their whole pitch was, we can win Stanley Cups and this is how. If they have Jesse Pugliarvi, and Mitch Marner's your best player, he's a really good player, and Willie Nylander, I'm not sure what he is without Matthews. We'd have to find out. So this is a team that probably doesn't finish eighth without Matthews, right? So they don't make the playoffs that year, let's assume, with Pugliarvi instead of Matthews.
Yeah, 2 years ago they're not in.
And then last year maybe they finish eighth. And that's what you're selling to John Tavares. And does he come?
I'm not sure he comes.
They thought he was going to San Jose, man.
That's right. And listen, the hometown stuff was very, very welcomed, and it was something we've been talking about throughout my lifetime. I mean, the idea of a superstar from the city who comes home and wants to play, and that's an easy sales pitch and one that everyone was going to eat up and everyone's going to appreciate. But it would not have been brought up if this team was awful. I mean, that's the reality.
There are moments in every franchise that change everything, good or bad, right? Like, there are bad ones, too. Like, the fact that, like, when LeBron leaves the Cavaliers, it changes the whole course of the franchise, right? But when he comes back, it changes it again. And then when he leaves, it changes it again. One guy can do that. With the Leafs, Matthews is that level of change in that he allows you to do everything. And he informs all their long-term thinking. Everything they're doing, this Leafs franchise didn't just try to win a Stanley Cup within 3 years when they had all their guys on entry level. They're saying what Matthews does opens the window for a 10 to 12-year span, and that's what we're thinking about.
So that was the end goal a few years ago with the Leafs, when Leaf fans, to your point, just said, I'm out of here. And that's what they did. Like, we talk about how they still sold tickets and people showed up.
There was a lot of people who showed up who got someone else's ticket.
Absolutely. There were a lot of empty seats. I remember doing a game. I remember doing a pre and post game. It was Leafs, Arizona, late in the season. I want to say it was in March at this point. One of the worst sporting displays in the history of the world. I mean, I'm talking, this was two of the worst teams that have ever played in the league.
Yep.
Because Arizona was awful.
Well, I don't think worst teams ever. There have been some pretty bad teams.
Maybe there's some hyperbole there. But the point being is, it was awful.
They were not good.
It was
not
terrible.
Good hockey team.
There was no entertainment value. They were both wanting to lose. It was the tank bowl or the tank game.
It was a contractually obligated game.
Exactly. It happened to be on the schedule, and they were obligated to show up. And I remember doing a pre and post game. And, like, before the game, give me your three reasons why the Leafs are going to win tonight. It's such a waste of time. But by the third period, there were maybe 5,000 people there.
Yeah.
Like, by the third period of that year, people were like, I am leaving. I am not staying for this. So this idea that the Leafs were foolproof and lucrative and everyone was totally invested is simply not true. I mean, it just was not the case. But we knew what the payoff was. I don't know what the payoff is for the Blue Jays right now, because it's not about them getting the first pick or winning the lottery and picking an Austin Matthews-type player that you build around. And I don't know what this season represents 3 years from now that would be the equivalent of, wow, we signed Tavares and now we're really rolling. I don't know what this year does or where this year stands in the overarching plan of Shapiro and Atkins.
Well, plan is where this goes sideways, right? This should have been the year where you light the dynamite and blow the bridge, right? And then build a new one to whatever you're going to do next. Because if Josh Donaldson stays healthy, you move him and get a significant package back. And if Marco Estrada has a Marco Estrada year, you move him and you get a piece or two that you can really use in the future back. And if you'd sold enough of the guys at the height of their value, guys you knew weren't going to be a part of your future, if you had done that, that sets you up to have more assets and more chances and more shots when Vladdy and Bichette and the next generation arises. Instead, this is a forced demolition that I repeat myself on this all the time, but this is the moment. Back in December, Mark Shapiro gave an interview, and he said, if not for the fans, we would have blown this up a year and a half ago. And that was the truest thing he's ever said as the president of the Toronto Blue Jays. And basically it was, we are selling too many tickets and doing too many, the TV numbers are too good. So we kept this thing together too long. And they backed themselves into a corner and wound up selling off scraps at the deadline.
So, yeah, that statement will hang around his neck for a long time.
So in terms of plan, the plan is to, they're going to have to start setting a rebuild at some point. They've been backed into that corner. Maybe they re-sign Donaldson for a year and sell him next year to a playoff contender, whatever it is. But these guys have to build whatever the next thing is now. And Lassune is gone and is not their problem anymore. Donaldson is no longer Donaldson. At some point, Marcus Stroman, it sounded like there were talks involving Marcus Stroman. He drives a lot of people up the wall.
But the thing about that is, he's interesting. He's one of the very few characters on this team and elements of the team that are actually intriguing to me.
Is that good, though,
I'm not
from
saying
the team standpoint?
I'm not saying that, necessarily. I'm not speaking on behalf of Shapiro and Atkins and how you build a club and what do you think is in your best interest for the here and now and 3, 5, 10 years down the road.
Yeah.
But I will say Stroman, because we all complain about him, we all talk about him because he's actually interesting.
Yeah.
Like, There isn't anybody else on this roster that garners any attention, that garners any polarization or debate or what have you. It's only Stroman. I mean, is there anybody else? I don't think I'm missing anybody.
You know what? When Aaron Sanchez comes up for a contract and Scott Boras starts talking again?
Potentially.
That'll be a thing.
But what kind of leverage does he have right now? And again, with all due respect to him, he's not Mr. Personality.
Yeah,
he just
kind of
goes about his business. That's
down the road, but you're right.
Like, for different reasons, the Osuna conversation was going to lead people to talk.
Yeah.
But if Vladdy doesn't come up, but you got 2 months left in the season. Outside of every fifth day when Stroman goes up or what he posts on Instagram, I don't know what's going to happen with this team. It's going to be intriguing.
Yeah, there's a lot of games left.
There's a lot of games.
There's a whole lot of games
left.
There's like 50 games left.
Yeah, I mean, but maybe Donaldson comes back and they can...
But we remember what this felt like, right? Like, and because of the way the Yankees and the Red Sox are playing, it's a little more acute. But we remember what it felt like for the Jays... to at some point, like, the games didn't matter anymore. We've had so many seasons like that in Toronto. How many games have mattered outside of 2015 and 2016? How many Jays games have mattered in the last 25 years? Not very many.
Not many. Post July 31st.
And so where we are is we are exactly back to where we were, and it's back to the same kind of attendance that we had before, where you'll get 10, 12,000 people in there on a Tuesday against Minnesota. And it's they're back to where they were. And we had 2 years of everyone understanding what the Jays could be on and off the field. The power, the deep well of love and passion for this team that existed. And now it's gone, right?
But it can be recaptured.
It can.
But it comes with winning. It doesn't come with a superstar 19-year-old.
Yeah.
It doesn't come with a couple of names that we're familiar with, like Guerrero Jr. and Bichette and Biggio.
Yeah.
It comes with... I think they can win 90-plus games and actually win.
Yeah, that's what it's got to
be. And it'll be there again. I mean, that's, I think, the lesson that I took out of 15 and 16 was that all of the complaining and all of the concern and all of the apathy that was there for 20 years and this idea that people would never come back was always bogus. People were going to come back.
Yeah.
You just had to win. And that's what the Jays finally accomplished. And I don't know when they're going to do that again.
Well, and now Baltimore's starting to dive down so they can come back up.
Right. Well, they're already down.
So they're starting the actual, like, they traded Machado. Like, they're starting to do what you're supposed to do. If you're bad and you're in this division, let's start building for the next thing. Let's be the Tampa Bay Rays of whenever it was. The Jays just are kind of paddling around and how much time, and counting the time till the Martin and Tulowitzki contracts expire.
Well, that feels like it's a part of the program here, and that's still a couple of years down the road for Martin and Tulowitzki.
Well, you got to pay someone, I guess.
I guess.
Right? Like, that's okay.
The NFL is back tonight, the Hall of Fame game. I'm actually going to watch some of this tonight, and it's simply because of the potential quarterback play. Mitch Trubisky will likely play for the Bears. But how many people do you think know that RG3 is still in the NFL? On average.
I think I knew. Because he was with Cleveland, right?
Yeah, but he's with Baltimore
there was
now.
A Cleveland
he's playing
thing.
Tonight.
No, that you're watching this tells me, and this isn't...
I'm desperate.
That's what it is. This isn't like, well, you know, there's nothing else on.
Yeah.
I'll just watch. This is you going, I need a little bit.
I need something.
I need a tiny bit of this. I need the colors. I need this. The first time you hear Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth's voices,
yes,
it's like methadone.
I love
right?
it.
Like,
I'm
just
a fiend, and I've been fiending.
Oh, you can breathe it in.
Yes.
And like RG3, who was it? Did you read Drew Magri's thing on Deadspin, Why Your Team Sucks?
No. Well, I see some of the teams. Like, I don't read all 32.
You got to read all 32, because everyone's a snowflake. They're all wonderful. But one of the things that he talked about, that they talked about with the fear in Houston, is that Deshaun Watson, like, the worst case scenario is RG3.
Mm.
Like, that's the ghost of the quarterback who's thrilling and can do stuff and makes you want to watch, and then he dies on the field. So,
at least RG3 got through his rookie season.
Preseason NFL football.
Yes, I know. Believe me, it's
go for a walk,
it's pathetic.
Man. Just
it
like,
is.
It's a nice night.
I understand that, but, you know, again, the Jays are out west, and I don't know if I'm going to watch a lot of that game. I guess I'll see Clippard. Felix Hernandez is starting tonight, and his numbers are awful this year.
Yeah.
Like, King Felix is struggling, but the Argos are down to their third stringer. They're playing tonight. I'm looking forward to Manziel tomorrow.
Yeah.
I will say that.
That's
and that
be
means
the show.
Something,
yep.
And it's meaningful, and it's going to be a show. And I don't know if he's prepared. I'm not bracing for him to look great tomorrow night, but he's doing this comeback season podcast with the Barstool guys, who he's had a connection to for a long time. And
yeah, which is perfect.
It's so perfect that you haven't taken a snap of pro football in over 2 years, not a snap in the CFL, and he's talking a big game about what he's going to do and how he's totally confident. And
he's done
no
that from the start here, actually, yeah.
Right, and there's a lot of talk from this guy, and he hasn't taken a snap in the Canadian football.
Although you saw what his agent told the Barstool podcast, right?
You were mentioning that. Yeah, what did he say?
So this is his agent, Eric Burkhard. And he said, I've gone round and round with kind of your front office and everything else. I mean, have you learned more than 9 plays in the 3 practices you've got before they decide to throw you out to the wolves, so to speak? I do, paraphrase, think it's premature. It's insane. That is your agent. And he goes on, and he keeps going, and he goes, I think you're only as good as your play calling and your experience around you, and I think everyone is trying to figure this thing out. I'm a little bit uncomfortable, and I think expectations need to be tempered because this is not baseball. You can't just throw him in the 5-hole and put him in left field, and who gives a blank what jersey he's wearing?
People are going to try to violently crush him tonight.
Absolutely. From the first moment he stepped in this league, guys in the CFL are like, oh, yeah?
He's going to get laid out because that O-line in Montreal is horror awful.
23 sacks, I believe, they've given up in the 6 games.
Yeah. He doesn't know the playbook.
It's not even knowing the playbook, right? Like, because you can run 10 plays, variations on them, and he can make plays with his legs and that can work. He doesn't know how the CFL works. It's like driving a car that's like an extra 3 feet wide and you're driving on the wrong side of the road. It's going to take some time.
Yes.
Because there's extra guys in different schemes, the defensive schemes he's not going to recognize at all in all likelihood. And it's the amount of time, when I watched him in preseason, here's the thing with the CFL. The quarterback, what you have to grasp, and this is like any league, I guess, can I get this throw there before that guy gets there? And so it's space, right? It's you have windows in which to put the ball. And it takes time to figure out whether you can do that, because that's not a throw you've ever seen before. The 40-yard out, like that you've got to throw in the CFL to the far hash mark, is a hard throw. This league is hard, man. Like, guys don't come into this league from American football, especially not after taking 2 years off, and just figure it out. I think Johnny Manziel is going to get his ass kicked.
I think he's in big trouble.
I think this is a terrible move for the CFL, for the Alouettes, and for Johnny Manziel.
Well, I think it's a great move for potentially selling some tickets and creating some buzz. TSN is in love with this because they cannot wait for tomorrow night. They love that he didn't get a snap last week because now you can continue to amplify the introduction of Johnny Manziel into the CFL.
ESPN's going to be there tonight.
They're all over
I bet I bet Yahoo's going to be there tonight.
Yeah.
Like the U.S., the national media.
Because he
there's
generates
nothing else
interest.
To write about. This is a story.
Exactly. Like he generates interest. Yep. He's a TMZ kind of guy. He's become a celebrity. He won the Heisman. He went to the Browns. He flamed out. He's been in bar fights and arrested and all that kind of stuff. He's got a backstory.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got an image in American sports. And now it's carried over to this side of the border, and it begins tomorrow night, and I will be watching. I am genuinely intrigued. I want to see how he looks. I hope he does well. I think it'd be great for the league. It'd be great for the league if he actually performed and became a lights-out superstar right off the bat.
A good quarterback who's a celebrity in the CFL?
Absolutely. You need that. You need that. And I'm just not bracing for it. No. I think it's going to take him some time. Argo's in action tonight against Ottawa. You can hear that on TSN Radio. Watch it on TSN. So Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson, they've been in the news for a long, long time. But they have a date picked, reportedly, in terms of when they're going to go mano a mano for, reportedly, $10 million. We'll tell you a little bit about these details, why I think the date is actually very, very interesting, yet potentially brilliant for Tiger. And we'll recap his day this afternoon at the WGC, where he had a great, great morning. So Bruce Arthur's in here from the Toronto Star. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues on the TSN app. All right, so a rare admission of fault on our behalf, because generally we're just a flawless show. We never screw anything up. But yesterday we were supposed to be, well, we announced that we were going to give away a bunch of these Mac coins, because today is McDonald's Canada celebrates the 50 years of Big Mac in Canada. 50 years the Big Mac has been dominating the fast food chains up here in Canada. And we made a mistake, and yesterday we were going to give out all these Mac coins. Turns out we're actually going to do it today. So we're going to do a giveaway each hour, so the 4, 5, and 6 p.m. hour. When we announce it, we'll open up the phone lines, and whoever gets in based on the number that we're asking for will win 50 Mac coins an hour. And each Mac coin is worth one Big Mac. So basically, we're handing out 50 Big Macs an hour. That's how we roll. And Bruce Arthur's in here from the Star. And Bruce just spent the majority of the break trying to convince me to actually care about the Tour de France.
Oh, yeah.
I just can't do it, man.
It's good stuff.
You tried. You tried your hardest. But I don't get how you find any entertainment value in watching people bike around.
I like watching people suffer.
Yeah.
That's why, like in golf, I like it when the course is very difficult. That's the best. Cycling is like that, except it's on their bodies. And it's awesome. A good mountain stage is one of the best things in sports.
So do you like chaos? Are you a proponent of chaos?
Generally, yeah.
So are you hoping Kobe Bryant returns and comes back and plays? Bruce. Don't you want to see this happen, though?
He's not going to do that.
I think there's a chance because everything this guy's done has been, okay, what did Jordan do before? Oh, Jordan came back multiple times? I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. I really don't.
I'm of two minds. One is I don't think he would want to embarrass himself, but I also think Kobe has maybe both more and less self-awareness than maybe any athlete I've ever seen at the exact same time. The only reason he'll do it is so that he'll remind people how much the Kobe stands in L.A., the crazy Kobe fans, that how much they love him more than LeBron.
That's exactly why
I think he'd do it.
Yeah, I think he'd do
it. I think he'll flirt with it. I bet you what he does is he flirts with it and doesn't do it.
Here's what I picture. And the reason this is in the news is because Shaq flippantly threw it out there that he's heard Kobe's making a comeback. And then it actually got to a point where Kobe's wife had to post something on Facebook, I think, saying that it's not going to happen. You'll notice it was Kobe's wife, not Kobe. I picture like an Instagram post, him in the gym, putting up shots, you know, something along those lines, just to have people kind of tracking what's going on with Kobe, and he'll feed the beast a little bit. If I know Kobe Bryant, I think he'll feed the beast, but I wouldn't be surprised at all if he was genuinely disappointed that LeBron was in L.A.
There's three things to this. One, I don't think Shaquille O'Neal is a reputable reporter yet.
No.
Two, I think he had the perfect exit of getting to take 50 shots and score 60 points and walk away. And I think he's just going to let the crazy Kobe fans do the work for him. They've already defaced the LeBron mural, like, every day. Like, they did the LeBron Lakers mural. Every day someone goes by and throws a can of paint on it.
Imagine hating on LeBron signing with your team.
I'm so mad LeBron signed with my team.
Like, what an obnoxious fan base.
Someone's thinking that.
Yeah. I hate that LeBron's here because now somehow this is going to devalue the legacy of Kobe or something.
God bless him.
It when you have too much greatness, like this is the kind of thing I would expect in Boston, right? Like Brady will retire and somehow Andrew Luck will end up there, fully recovered, 100% Andrew Luck. And people in Boston will be like, I don't like him. He wasn't drafted in the sixth round. Yeah. I don't want an elitist first overall type talent.
No. You know who it's going to be? Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah,
a guy, the only guy in the world who might be better.
Yeah,
and he'll get there, and he'll be a mate, and they'll be like, I don't know.
Yeah, you're right.
He's not really Timmy material.
Because it does have to be someone who's on the level above.
LeBron's way better than Kobe.
LeBron's better than Kobe.
Way better.
Absolutely, he is. And there's no question.
That's part of the problem.
Yeah. So Tiger Woods is actually playing this week, and we talked about this yesterday. He's got the potential to play in like six events in the next 53 days because of the FedEx and the PGA Championship next week. And so the WGC Bridgestone, which he has dominated, it's a course that he's dominated for a long, long time. He played well this morning, 4 under. He's in contention. It's day one. Mickelson's playing pretty well. He's at 4 under through 12. But the bigger news, courtesy of, I think it was Mike Greenberg of ESPN, reporting that there is a date that has been set for this one-on-one with $10 million on the line, Tiger versus Phil, which I think is about 10 years too late, because now they like each other, which sucks.
Yeah.
They should at least feign hating each other. Like, pretend like you hate each other, even though they're not doing that. But what I love about this date is that when you think of Thanksgiving in the States, yes, some people think of football. I think of Thanksgiving 2009, the beginning of the greatest downfall in the history of pro sports. That was when allegedly Tiger's ex-wife chased him around the compound with a 5-iron and beat the hell out of his car.
Smashed out the back window.
Yeah. Yes. And
then he drove into a tree. Fire hydrant combination. I can't remember exactly.
And somehow got out. I don't know. It's a confusing story.
Yeah. But one of those nights.
Yeah. It happens to the best of
We've
us.
We've all been there.
Everyone's been there. So Thanksgiving, U.S. Thanksgiving 2009 was the beginning of this downfall for Tiger. So my initial reaction was, okay, wouldn't you want to distance yourself from that date if you're Tiger Woods? Like, you've become synonymous with U.S. Thanksgiving, and not in a good way. But I actually think this is a brilliant move, now that I put more thought into it, because I think what he's trying to do is recapture U.S. Thanksgiving. Like, he's trying to put a positive spin in terms of his reputation.
Take it back.
Yes. You know what I'm saying? Like, make U.S. Thanksgiving 2018 a date that people have to recognize, as opposed to only 2009.
It's a bold play.
Because,
what's the first question? Hey, Tiger, what are some of your favorite Thanksgiving memories?
What were you doing 9 years ago? Let's just pick a random date. How about 2009 U.S. Thanksgiving?
I'm kind of impressed that, like it says in the report, some reports say the purse could be $10 million.
Mm-hmm.
That is fascinating to me for two reasons. One, I mean, I know it's Tiger and Phil, but it's 2018 Tiger and Phil. Actually, Tiger might be more interesting now than he's been in quite a long time. But, how has this not happened before? How have you not done pay-per-view golf before to this level? There's been some stuff.
There have been some, skins games and stuff like that. But not with these two type of guys. This kind of money, I believe it's going to be mic'd up. It may be a pay-per-view type thing. I'm not sure that those details have been ironed out yet. But, I'm a believer that the tour should be terrified that this kind of stuff could take off.
You know what they should do? You know, who's the golfer that people don't like who's really good?
Well, Patrick Reed is
There's your guy. There's your guy right there. I want to see Patrick Reed play a new golfer every week, one-on-one, and Patrick Reed just gives it to them all day long.
Like a pool hall shark. That's
Give
what he
that.
Feels like, doesn't he?
Because he might be able to beat him. That's the thing.
Oh, he's got ice in his veins, that kid.
What do we want in entertainment? We want heroes and villains. And we want the anti-heroes as well. And Patrick Reed might be that. He might not. I don't think he really is. But, give me that every week during the dead time in golf. I will watch.
Who's the hero? Who's the villain with Tiger and Phil?
It's complicated. And actually, that might be the best selling point, is that Phil's someone that people have loved, who a lot of golf writers and you talk to go, Phil's not the best guy, but he's actually mellowed from being that kind of phony into something a little more authentic, I think, as time's gone on. And so is Tiger. They're very similar that way, actually, in that Tiger now is... We've had such a long journey with Tiger in the public eye. There's so much water under that bridge that everything he does has meaning. Everything he does has significance, even if it's him bombing out of a tournament in the middle of nowhere, right? So who's the hero? Tiger is the hero.
I think he would be the hero.
Because people...
But people that hate Tiger, they hate Tiger.
But what do most people want?
They want to see the comeback.
They want to see it.
That's what they want to see. Rex Hoggard of GolfChannel.com will join us. We'll get him to answer that. If these two go head-to-head, Phil versus Tiger, who's the hero, who's the villain, and what does he expect out of Tiger and the tour over the next 6-plus weeks? We'll get to that in 2 minutes. Henry Burris in studio in the 5 p.m. hour. We'll get into this Urban Meyer Ohio State story as well as it continues to develop. And that broke towards the end of the show yesterday that he was placed on administrative leave, and all hell has broken loose ever since in terms of just the American media pouncing on it, and everybody's got a take, and everyone's got a prediction of what's going to play out there. But we're talking about Tiger versus Phil. It sounds as if it's going to go down one-on-one for upwards of $10 million, both players mic'd up. Thanksgiving, U.S. Thanksgiving, so this November. Both of them are currently down in Akron, Ohio at the WGC Bridgestone. And to chat about it, we're joined now by senior writer with GolfChannel.com. Here's Rex Hoggard. How you doing, Rex?
Good, yeah. Looks like it's going to happen. It's going to be the weekend after Thanksgiving. I'll be in Vegas.
Yeah, so we were talking about this. Bruce and I were talking about this. The beauty of a one-on-one is generally there's a good guy and there's a bad guy. There's a hero and a villain. In this case... Who would be the hero? Who would be the villain?
I guess whoever shows up wearing black and whoever shows up wearing white. No, I think it's funny. There was a time in golf where I always thought golf was at its best when Phil was playing his best. Because, Tiger seems like he was always on. And then when Phil had those bouts where, you know, he was able to give Tiger a run, it just gave golf this great rivalry. And it was so polarizing. You were either a Tiger fan or a Phil fan. It was no one in between. I think it's changed a little bit the last few years. It has a lot to do with, you know, Tiger's struggles with his back injury and kind of being competitively irrelevant for so long. And the face it, Phil's, you know, in his late 40s at this point. So it kind of tapered off. You don't really have like that polarizing feel to it. But I think they will do a very good job of publicizing this and turning this into a mano-a-mano thing and playing on those old rivalries. And I think you will end up with a pretty equal mix of people who are Tiger fans and Phil fans. And it'll be an entertaining match.
Well, it's funny, Rex. We were talking just before you came on about how these guys, we've been with them for so long that they've gone through periods where they've been up and they've gone through periods where they've been down. They've gone through periods where everybody loves them. They've gone through periods where it's been a little harder. And at this point, I just feel like there's just so much nuance and so much significance to both guys. It does feel like it's, in terms of the golf, it does feel late to a degree to have these guys in this kind of event. But in terms of their lives and their kind of just everything they've unspooled over years, there's a lot of interest there for me.
It definitely would have been better 10 years ago. Now, I'm not the first one to say that. I'm sure I won't be the last one. I don't know if it could have happened 10 years ago. They're both in different stages of their career. We've both seen them sort of embrace the elder statesman role. We've seen them team together at Ryder Cups, not so much as in a pairing that didn't work very well the one time Hal Sutton did it, but more as vice captains or leaders in the team room. And we've seen them actually play practice rounds this year, where I think there is an appreciation. You know, maybe it's not a deep friendship, but there's certainly an appreciation for what they've both been able to accomplish in each other's wake to a certain degree. So you don't really have that edge maybe that you had at one point. I mean, I think there was a point in their career when it was a genuine thought that they didn't like each other. And you certainly don't have that anymore. But I think there's still a competitive element to this where Phil has won this year. Tiger has come very, very close. I think you talk to most people, they'll tell you that, you know, most people who are close to Tiger, they'll tell you that, yeah, he's very close. So they're still right there, I wouldn't say in the prime, but they're close enough where I think this will be a relevant match. Now, the problem is you always hope for these things to turn out for the best, but rarely do you get, and we see it at the match play every year, we see it at the Ryder Cup, where you never get these head-to-head duels where both guys are playing their best. That's going to be the biggest challenge. I think what we're going to end up with is one guy's going to be sharp, and he's going to make a bunch of putts, and it's going to turn out not to be much of a match after all this build-up.
With Rex Hoggard of GolfChannel.com, that's where I hope they allow for some leeway. We're talking about the idea of Tiger taking on Phil Mickelson this November, upwards of $10 million potentially being on the line. I mean, anyone that plays golf and gambles, not for $10 million, but even if you're playing $5 a hole, $10 a hole, the ability to double down, push, you know, come up with creative games on the fly, could you see that potentially being allowed? In other words, will there be rules and regulations, or could these guys potentially get through 5 holes, 10 holes, and say, you know what, let's put more money on the line, or let's double down, let's push, because if one guy's smoking the other guy, there's no point in watching.
No, and I think that'll be the interesting part here, what format they decide to go with, and they haven't announced, and look, I mean, this hasn't even been officially announced yet. I mean, ESPN reported it. Tiger was asked about it the day after his round. He said no contracts have been signed, if there's nothing further to add. Although I think it's this far down the road, I would be surprised if it doesn't happen. But the format's going to be the key, as you just pointed out. Is it going to be just a straight stroke play match between these two? Is it going to be a match play? Are they going to make it entertaining? Are they going to play a game of hammers or Nassau or whatever the case may be, a skins game? I think that would be the better way to do it. That way you give a guy who maybe doesn't get off to a great start, and instead of making this just a silly march down the stretch with one guy clearly going to win, into something that's exciting.
Because it's in Nevada, could there be like a gambling, like a casino or resort that's affiliated with this? Like, I'm wondering if they're, we see where the sports world is going. We just had the NBA work out a deal with MGM about, you know, legalized sports gambling and like the idea of promoting in-game betting. Could you see that being a factor of the promotion here? Like, don't only tune in and watch, bet with these guys, like bet on who's going to win each hole or who's going to hit the next putt or whatever it could be. Could you see that be something, is that further down a road, or might that be involved and included in this event?
I think it has to be. I mean, there's a reason why it's in Vegas, right? I think this will have to be an element of it. Look, the PGA Tour, like the NBA, as you just pointed out, they signed the deal with MGM Resorts. Major League Baseball, they've all embraced gaming. They know it's inevitable. But if you talk to all of these leagues, specifically the PGA Tour, they really want it to be a mobile deal where you're not going to have so much people sitting in a sports book making the bets. You're going to have them just on their phone. I think that's what you'll end up with in Las Vegas. Now, there's going to be situations in golf, period, where you're going to be in certain states that don't allow gaming, states that do. So that brings up some other questions. But in this particular case, I can't imagine that there's not some sort of gaming element to it, particularly with it being in Las Vegas.
I feel like, Rex, golf could have a real opportunity with gambling. Just like hole by hole, stroke by stroke, there's so many kind of stress points in any tournament with so many players. I feel like as the sports world rushes to embrace gambling, golf could really benefit from it.
I think so, and I think golf realized this. I mean, a lot of people did not see it on the horizon, the Supreme Court ruling that happened just a few months ago that essentially did away with the rule or did away with the policy that wouldn't allow sports betting in certain states. I think you, Vegas, and there was one other state, blanking right now what it might be. And you've already seen New Jersey. I mean, in a few weeks, the PGA Tour is going to be in New Jersey, and they already opened sports books. And it'll be interesting to see how that impacts that particular event. And the tour knows what this is going to bring. First and foremost, it's going to bring out a new audience. I mean, all fantasy sports are people who really just want to gamble. Mm-hmm. So now you're bringing them into golf, and you're right. There's so many in-play bets that you can make over the course of a round. And whether it's a PGA Tour round or it's this particular match between Tiger and Phil, you can bet on the negative outcome. You can bet on who's going to win a hole. You can bet on where a drive's going to end up. I mean, you can take this down to the micro. And the way they do stats now on the PGA Tour, it can be a very engaging product. And they know it. And they also know that there's money to be made here.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something that the PGA Tour is out front. I'll give them credit. They've been very proactive about this. They're getting in front of state legislators, as we speak. And they're trying to make this happen. And again, this goes back to, if you put this on mobile devices, I can walk around the course this week at Firestone. And I can make bets on certain matches or certain two-ball bets or whatever the case may be. That engages fans on a whole new level.
Thank you for doing this, Rex. Appreciate it. We'll catch up down the road.
Appreciate it, guys.
Rex Hoggard of thegolfchannel.com. Yeah, I mean, gambling, it's not anywhere close to the mainstream of gambling on the NFL or college football or the NBA. But there are a lot of people that do gamble on golf because you've got it going every single week. You can bet individual players. You can bet top five, top ten.
And think about a dynamic market. Think about the back nine of a major, right, on Sunday. Think about how crazy that can get. And think about in-game betting applied to that, right? Like, Jean Vandeveld is coming up fairway. Oh, what am I going to bet on here?
A double bogey.
Things are going to... I only had double.
Yes.
I only had a double bogey. He made triple.
And
that's,
you know what,
terrible.
The thing is, too, because gambling, it's always been kind of a shady industry. Mm-hmm. It's always had this reputation.
Kind of, a little bit.
It's always had the reputation of being seedy, and you don't want to be at the track or the casino. The thing is about live betting on your phone, no one has to know that you're doing it, which can be dangerous.
Someone does know.
But somebody knows. You're right. But it's not like you have to drive down to the casino or fly to Nevada to actually play here. And that is where I think everything's going to break loose, because it's a lot like politics, right? Publicly, people are like, oh, I'm never voting for that person. Then they get in the booth. They're like, yep, I'm voting for that guy. That's exactly what I want happening here. It's the same thing. Like, quietly, I'm going to gamble. I'm just not going to promoted.
There was this one episode of The Sopranos where two of the guys, I think it was Paulie and someone else, they go to shake down the business that had replaced the business that they used to shake down, and it was a Starbucks. And they walk into the Starbucks, they're like, you know what, it'd be a real shame if something were to happen here, if you could just, you know, and basically say you give us some skim off. And the guy's like, headquarters keeps track of this stuff down to the penny. Like, if I lose a straw, then that something's going to happen. I can't give you anything. I'm just going to get fired.
Right.
And they're like, oh. And that's what gambling is now in terms of sports, in terms of all kinds of things, is it used to be if you gambled and didn't go great, there was a chance someone was going to break your legs. Now you're just going to go bankrupt. Like, now you're just going to go into debt and default on your credit
card. Right, which is much better.
But it's a much more civilized
yes, exactly.
series of consequences for gambling.
Yeah.
But it's coming because, like anything, money colonizes everything. And Everyone's figured out we can make money off this. Beautiful.
It's foolproof because the casinos, they don't lose. The leagues, if they're just getting a cut, they're going to continue to get paid, regardless of who wins or loses. They're just going to simply get their cut.
Yep.
The phone lines are open, 416-870-1050. Caller 5 at 416-870-1050 picks up our first installment of 50 Mac coins. We're doing this once an hour throughout the afternoon. 50 Mac coins equals 50 Big Macs. Get after it. 416-870-1050. Caller 5 picks that up. We'll get to Sound Wars next.
The greatest moments in history are now up to you. This is TSN 1050's Sound Wars.
Yeah! All right, so as we know, we're doing this once a day. Time for a conference championship Sound War battle in the Jerry Conference. It's seed number 2.
As my boy Kid Rock would say, I'm a cowboy, baby, with the top let down and the sunshine shining. Cowboy, baby. Jerry sees another lockout from a mile away.
All right, so that's seed number 2 in the Jerry Conference going up against seed number 3.
Mr. Peter Chiarelli in Edmonton, I have a poem for you. It goes something like this. Peter, Peter, pumpkin eater, you're not winning the lottery. And if by some miracle it happens, I'll personally rip that franchise out of Edmonton and ship it off to the worst city on earth. That's right, Winnipeg. You might have a second team starting next season.
That is so uncalled for. I still don't know why we allowed Jerry to say that.
Oh.
He hates Winnipeg, Bruce.
Why does he hate Winnipeg
Listen, Winnipeg, it's got its ups and downs. The worst city in the world, Jerry, just relax, okay?
Ooh, tough.
Go to TSN1050.ca, click on Sound Wars, and vote for your favorite. And voting for this Sound War closes tomorrow at 8 a.m. Listen to Landsberg in the morning for the Jerry Conference champion and to start a new Elite Eight Sound Wars battle again right here on TSN1050. And Winnipeg and Toronto, the only two hockey teams in the country who have just kind of been left alone this offseason, outside of course, you know, Tavares signing and, you know, the actual on the ice product being a conversation piece. But Montreal, they're freaking out and they don't like the GM. They're not sure about the owner. Ottawa, we all know what the story is there.
Oh.
Calgary, I think that ownership is going to, more and more people are going to learn what's going on in Calgary because they're not in a great spot.
And they don't have a building.
And then you look at Edmonton and you look at Vancouver now. And with the Trevor Linden stuff.
Just going great.
How about the reports coming out here that it kind of sounds like Jim Benning basically just sewered Trevor Linden. That's the reporting at this point.
That seems to be, according to a number of reports, how Linden feels about it, that he was betrayed by Jim Benning. And actually, you tell me what else would explain, like, I grew up in Vancouver. We didn't have a lot of really great hockey memories growing up in Vancouver. Like, there were two Stanley Cup Finals in 82 and then 94, and that was it. Like, there was nothing ever even good other than that, although when they lost to Calgary in the first round. People love Trevor Linden there. He is, I don't even know if there's a direct equivalent here. Wendell's probably the closest. People love Trevor Linden, and he, I think, really appreciated being in that job, and he just walked away, man. Like, so there was, he lost a fight.
Absolutely. The idea that it was an amicable breakup.
Come on.
Like, nobody believed that. Nobody.
And if it was, the stories coming out would be, it was affecting his health. It was a problem for his family.
He'd be out in front of it, speaking of it.
And it wouldn't be sources close to Trevor Linden say that he got knifed in the back.
Yeah. I don't think he's spoken on the record. Like, a couple of statements came out, but he's not doing interviews or anything. And you know they're pursuing that in Vancouver. Henry Burris will be in studio. It's Argos Red Blacks tonight. Johnny Manziel's debut tomorrow. We'll get into this Urban Meyer story. Bruce Arthur's in here from the Star. I'm Brian Hayes. Hour 2 up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.